Ronaldo's got that twist now and pivot in the air.
Yeah.
I look at him doing that and I'm thinking, ooh, be careful. Yeah. That's like cruciate. That's potential cruciate in the making.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Imagine Ryder Cup disappointment for Europe, record defeat against what felt like a near unstoppable US team. Their best since 1981, certainly, maybe their best ever. Dermot Cleese is with us this hour. Obviously, huge disappointment for Harrington. Tears for McIlroy. Monday Night Rugby, we're presuming this is rock bottom for the Irish women's team. Can't get much lower than no World Cup qualification. Fiona Coughlan and Rory O'Connor on the way after eight, plus the opening weekend of the United Rugby Championship. Kenneth Egan on a bad night for Anthony Joshua. Kenny was great previewing the fight last week. He did suggest this was a possibility. So definitely curious to chat to Kenneth Egan around 8:40 or so. And then the football show. Man City lay down a marker at Stamford Bridge. Sam Lee joins us from The Athletic. We will also play you some of our Cadbury Road show. It was a Manchester United special, so some of that on the football show as well. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, hello.
Joe, how are you?
Very well. Adrian Barry, you're very welcome.
Evening, Joe, Richie.
Big weekend, lots to talk about. Fiona Coughlan on the way, Rory O'Connor on the way. No World Cup for the Irish women's team, which is an unbelievably huge blow for them. We had, like I said, opening weekend of the United Rugby Championship. And then, Padraig Harrington. It was tough watching Padraig Harrington have to face up to all the questions and the scrutiny and the criticism that goes with being a losing Ryder Cup captain, where it just comes your way no matter what. They were blown out of the water by Team USA, Adrian.
Ah, yeah, it was desperate, wasn't it? Like, just a weekend like that where all you want to do is just spend 15 hours on the couch every day, Joe, and get stuck into it, and you just want a bit of encouragement to be able to do that. And there were little glimpses, weren't there? There were small little glimpses, maybe. God, they must have lasted no more than about 15 minutes. A couple on Saturday, maybe on Sunday, like a little bit of a flicker or something. And, you know, just those little moments where you go, you know, maybe. Mm. But, yeah, like it really never materialized into much. Like every time you watched it, and they were doing that split screen stuff where the players were definitely taking the shots at the same time. And they were sort of showing you what was going on in the different greens. And, like, the story of it was... was it Casey? Who was Casey playing in the singles match yesterday at the end? Can't think who it was. He had a Dustin makeable
Johnson.
Putt to half.
Dustin Johnson. The very beatable Johnson. Dustin Johnson, who, by the way, was utterly perfect. He literally hit one bad shot in 3 days, Dustin Johnson. 5-0, his record this week.
And for all that, Casey could have halved it, right, on the last hole with a fairly straightforward putt, if I'm calling that match correctly.
Yeah.
It just slid on past. It didn't look like a big deal. It wasn't a huge putt. And that was really the story of the week. Like, a very makeable putt. Difference in quality. Everybody would flagellate themselves for the next couple of years about, you know, how to put this thing right. But I do think it just boiled down to, like, I mean, you talk about a difference in quality. Even the putt that he was going at last night, there was so many of those over the previous couple of days. Just very makeable stuff that... You know, you'd expect, you would definitely... Harrington spoke about afterwards. The press conferences were brilliant afterwards. I watched the European one in pretty much full. And they were talking about, you know, he was grilled and grilled again about what went wrong and what you might do right. All the players, what you might do differently. All the players gave 100%, he said. And you couldn't fault them for anything. Now, that's just not true. Like, I mean, you could definitely fault them for bits and pieces. Like, maybe they were playing up to where they're at in their career. And, you know, even when they were players, when the squads were introduced, the teams were introduced on the opening ceremony on Thursday, that was really the moment where I was like, all right, God, these lads are really old. They're really old. Mm.
Felt like the end of the road for quite a few. Lee Westwood for sure. Ian Poulter certainly. I mean, you say there were a few glimmers. There weren't many. like we're talking, like, glimmers. I have to say I tweeted last night that by Friday afternoon I felt it was over. In truth, I felt by Friday morning it was over. The nature of that opening foursome session was just devastating, because you looked, John Rahm and Sergio Garcia beat Spieth and Thomas in the opening match 3-1. And John Rahm, in that environment, with the ship sinking all around him, at all times and in a hostile atmosphere was phenomenal. Like, he went up in my estimation even more so than winning the US Open. And so really, you know, Sergio Garcia along for the ride, and Ram was going to be brilliant, and they beat Thomas and Spieth, who you knew, you know, were going to win matches themselves. But the rest of that session, it was like Casey Hovland, Dustin Johnson and Morikawa dispatched them, and you thought, wow, that's basically an unbeatable pair this week, Morikawa and Johnson. Then you had Lee Westwood and Matt Fitzpatrick, very iffy, and they were against Brooks Koepka, Daniel Berger, another unbelievably solid partnership. And then bringing up the rear, what was so dispiriting was McIlroy and Poulter, because it became apparent very quickly that, you know, one of the great hopes for Europe would have been A, that Rory McIlroy, who had been very tired, took his 2-3 weeks off and came back full of energy and ready to go. So it was obvious, based on his play in the first Friday morning, that was as bad as I've ever seen him play, actually. So he wasn't at the races. And then Poulter, again, the other hope was defying logic somehow. Like, Ian Poulter just defies logic at the Ryder Cup, and that's going to happen again. And that patently wasn't going to happen. What's worse, they were beaten 5-3 by Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele, which was another pairing. And so from Friday morning, I looked at those US pairings and I thought, they just can't be beaten by this European team. Those that they have that many pairings. Let me put it to you this way. You would struggle to tell me the US's best pairing between Cantlay, Schauffele, Morikawa, Johnson, Thomas Spieth, a couple of others. Scottie Scheffler and DeChambeau were brilliant in the four balls. After Rahm and Garcia, who was Europe's second best pairing?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
They didn't have a second pair in Europe. They didn't have one.
They had a couple of individuals, yeah. They had a couple of individuals going along, all right, but certainly not as a pairing or like that thing that you expect with the dovetailing. No, look, it was unbelievably disappointing. And also, like, the thing is around like the foursomes and the four balls, you can have a third year team who are good, and you can put them out, and four players, good players on form, can effectively drag you through Friday and Saturday. Now, Europe are even struggling with that, right, to have four players to pull them through. And certainly, I think any questions at Harrington, maybe some of them could be around that in terms of some of the selections he put out. But you can rely on four players, make them play four sessions. Ideally, you know, they're on song and they're playing well and they're dragging a few points out of it. But by the time Sunday comes around, you know, it's a very different dynamic. And you can't carry anybody and everybody's got to win points. Nearly in that context, Europe didn't do too badly yesterday almost in the end, because they were carrying such dead weight up to that point. But yeah. No, it very much felt like it was done and dusted. And Harrington's going to get, like, it's right. I was making the point on Twitter last night that, like, we went crazy for McGinley. And as people pointed out, maybe a little bit too crazy for McGinley after 2014. And, you know, the great job he had done. And, like, so Harrington, you can't have that and then give Harrington a free pass. You've got to look at that for sure. And I think there are question marks to be asked. But somebody was saying, like, you know, look at Faldo, and like, that's obviously, is he the equivalent of Watson in the way he's kind of held up kind of stunk the joint out a bit. But like, his team in 2008 they were a really good team, like, you know.
But it was also the way Faldo went about his business. Everything about it was bad. It was careless. Yeah. It was ill thought out. Yeah. Whereas Harrington, I suspect, has thought about this every which way you want to think about it. From minute one, he was putting out fires. There wasn't a good partnership there. There just were not enough players in good enough form or age-wise the right side of their peak. And it suddenly hit me a couple of days before, when on Golf Weekly we went through the form of all the European players over the last couple of weeks, months, and suddenly it was like just a desert. There was nobody in good form bar John Rahm. Like, nobody. And what do you do? You're literally putting out fires if you're Harrington. And I think you make a great point when you say one or two other players can make a huge difference. Unfortunately now for Europe, most of them are walking around with earpieces on as vice captains because they're just that bit too old.
I thought you meant that they were
Justin,
lads who were playing were going around with hearing aids.
Justin Rose was left out, which maybe you could quibble with, but ultimately, if you go back the last couple, like what McGinley had to work with, in Rose and Stenson, you had an almost unbeatable pair. So if Harrington had a Rose and a Stenson pairing to put out in all four matches, that's potentially, let's give them three out of four, which is very possible for those two. That's a 6-point swing. And maybe one or two of them win on Sunday as well. So, you know, it makes a huge difference. But I don't know how much you saw of it, Richie, but I mean, it was just like an absolute flogging, and it was over from Friday. So it was a long couple of days, I suspect, for Team Europe.
Yeah, drifting in and out, obviously, because there's other bits and pieces going to take my attention on Sunday in particular. But like, this isn't a Harrington thing, or it isn't even like a Steve Stricker thing. I'd be loath to put too much praise or too much criticism on a captain, particularly when the raw material which he's working or with which he's actually just, you know, pairing up or deciding the order of, aren't really there. I mean, you just have to compare man for man that US squad. It's something we brought up in the whole lead into the competition. The US team versus the European team in terms of their form, in terms of their ability, they're just at the moment, anyway, streets ahead of the European counterparts. So it's not like a football or a rugby manager whereby you can kind of alter your tactics throughout the tournament. You can, you know, change up pairings, but ultimately you can't change the fact that your players have no form and are coming into this thing like ice cold in the main, apart from John Ram. Like, there's just no altering that. So like, regardless, like, you can't really pile too much praise on Steve Stricker because he has these amazing raw materials. And if he's managed to do anything, he's managed to coalesce them into a team whereby, even with all these fractious personalities and people that apparently don't get on, managed to combine them in a winning dozen. Similarly, like, Harrington managed to bring that team together brilliantly. Just look at, you know, Rory McIlroy's reaction to the conclusion of his match last night. The guy was in tears. He's clearly bought into this whole Ryder Cup team ethic. But when you're cold and have no form, you have no form. And when you're just not good enough, you're just not good enough. And there ain't no captain in the world that is going to be able to change that.
No, I don't think so, realistically. Brendan and Leixlip, hi lads. It was always going to be a huge ask for Europe to beat what is probably the strongest US team ever. It was like expecting the Irish football team to beat any top team. Harrington made selection mistakes, but even if he got it right, we simply don't have the players to contend. It was over by Friday night. Joe in Waterford, Europe battled hard. Both teams played to their potential. Problem is, US team's potential is 10 players in the top 13 in the world. That's the other thing. The US actually all played to their potential. There's not a single player out there who had a bad Ryder Cup, which is absolutely not unheard of, but not far off it. Somebody in Cork wonders, Bracken and Cork, excuse me, Bracken, was the pairing of Rory and Poulter smart? I believe they were incompatible personalities and would separately have benefited from other pairings, so 4 points lost. They've been great before, Bracken. Those two are a trusted, tried and tested partnership. But I must say, I thought, based on the form of Rory coming into this and where Poulter is, I didn't think foursomes was right for them because, look, Rory just has a lot of mistakes in him at the moment. And that's not good in foursomes. And Poulter, you know, I think expecting him to just perform miracles all the time is obviously going to come up short at some stage. That said, you'd have to say, in Harrington's defence, Adrian, I don't think I'd have put Rory out first in the form he was in. But I understood the logic. Let's see, like, we can't lose. You know, he has to play at some stage. Let's see if we can spark something in him. That paid off beautifully.
Well, I absolutely. And I did wonder about all that, and I'd love to know what's going on in the team room behind it all, like even the McIlroy-Poulter pairing. Like, you'd have to assume, given, as Richie said, the emotion that came out of McIlroy afterwards, right, that he was hugely invested in this thing. In that context, he's probably talking to Harrington behind the scenes and going, listen, put me out. I want to do this for you. I want to do it for the team.
He did, like, yeah. Harrington confirmed that.
Did he really? Okay. Yeah. I didn't hear that. Okay.
But he said ultimately we made the decision, but he was definitely happy to go out first.
Yeah. So, like, that makes total sense to me. And in that context, if I'm Harrington, I'm like, you know, and there is a little bit in, for about all the reasons we've spoken about with the quality of the team and keeping your fingers crossed and putting them out and hoping for the best. There's no getting away from it. And like, you know, Richie makes the point about Stricker putting his 12 lads out, maybe not giving him a huge amount of credit. Like, compare that with the Watson captaincy and Mickelson afterwards and how he went through them. Compare those two press conferences and what happened.
Yeah.
And looking at the two lads in 2021 who despise each other. Now, look, it was all a bit cringeworthy and stuff, but they were getting to the point where they could have a bit of a hug. And that looked maybe in part, the second iteration of it, the one at the press conference, looked in part like it might have been a bit genuine between DeChambeau and Koepka. In part.
Trust me, like, the way the Europeans lost was brilliant. They did the same way in A16 in Hazeltine. Didn't throw anyone under the bus, even though it seemed like it was iffy enough behind the scenes. And they came back and they won in Paris and the relationships were all good. Whereas when the US lose, all hell breaks loose. And be under no illusions, like, okay, the US team are best friends. I want to see them lose as best friends before I buy it. And, like, Stricker's the perfect captain, stays out of their way, not looking for the limelight. I tell you what, let's get Patrick Reid automatically qualified back into that room.
Yeah.
And let's get that room toxic again with Patrick Reid. Let's bring that up a bit. And let's get Phil Mickelson as captain, making it all about Phil. And let's see how they go.
Oh, yeah. Even as vice captain, it was all about Phil. But that's a really good point. And I think if you the most distasteful thing of the entire week for me was a good insight, perhaps, into what happens when this team, when it wasn't all going for them, was the Berger Koepka exchange with the referees on Saturday, which was aggressive. It was intimidatory. It was wrong. Like, and it was actually proven wrong in the end, that when he took his stroke, that he was absolutely fine. But like the language that was used and how aggressive it was, I thought that was really poor. Like, and that was, you know, it wasn't, look at the match, wasn't in the melting pot. The tournament wasn't, as you say, it was kind of becoming quite clear at that point. But like, that was an insight into when things weren't going for them, and suddenly all this, like, you know, cracking the beers and like having all this fun and all that sort of stuff.
Justin Thomas is cringe, isn't he?
Ah, that was desperate stuff, wasn't it? And then they were all at it. It became a thing then by Sunday. They were all sort of... Let's have more... I was saying this after the Solheim Cup. Let's have more team golf. Let's have more of it. Like...
But then it won't be such a good thing. Rory won't be in tears if it's on every year, every 6 months.
It doesn't need to be a Ryder Cup. Like, we don't need to go all Gianni Infantino on this. But like,
I was just gonna Gianni Infantino of golf, Adrian Barry.
We could do... why couldn't we have a Europe... President's Cup version?
There is a Euro-Asia tournament. You obviously don't bother watching it.
Europe versus the rest of the world.
Yeah. Nobody cares about secondary things. The best, with the greatest will in the world, like the Ryder Cup is one of the great sporting distractions, in that, like in any other sport, it's major showpiece event. You can have players who can come in middling, or in terms of their notoriety, be not that well known, and come out a world beater. Your opinion of them can completely be changed. Like, somebody can have score 6 goals in a World Cup and suddenly they're one of the best players in the world. Like, nobody comes in or out of the Ryder Cup a better player or a worse player. Nobody from defeat or victory has, you know, their, you know, shoulders shrunken the next day, or their chest a little bit, you know, puffed out if you're a European winner. Like, it just is this little distraction that happens for 3 days every couple of years. Everybody buys into it, everybody gets a bit of crack out of it, and then you just let it sit for 2 years and come back to it. But it's not, like I say, it's
doesn't
just
make or break it. Yeah,
it's just a shiny thing. It's just a shiny thing to distract us for 3 days, and that's fair enough. Sometimes we need shiny things to get through life. But
Poulter might be the one player who's maybe kind of had his career really enhanced by it. But I definitely take the point. No one thinks less of Tiger because he wasn't a great Ryder Cup player. The clock is coming against us here, Richie. So our news round is with thanks to Gillette. Why don't you take the floor? We can skip by the Ryder Cup. I think we've talked enough about that. So there's football this evening.
There is, both in here and across in England. Dundalk have the chance to climb out of the relegation playoff spot in the SSE or Tricity Premier Division tonight. Finney Pertside welcome Bohemians to Oriel Park. Dundalk make 3 changes for that game. Will Patching is one of those to miss out, and Michael Duffy comes back into the side. Kickoff is at 7:45. Brighton, meanwhile, could end the night top of the Premier League table. A win for Graham Potter's side away to Crystal Palace. See the Seagulls soar above Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea and Liverpool. And kickoff at Selhurst Park is at 8.
He's Brighton. Well done. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is at the wheel, Adrian, for how much longer?
We were talking to Martin Lipton about this on Friday's OTBAM, and about like how long United will persist with, and I mean, even that looks slightly odd now today, but good rather than great in that position. Like, good in the context of what went before, but certainly not great in the context, I think, of what United fans would expect. And I just think the rope is getting shorter and shorter. Like, it's a constant thing that exists in the background there. Look, it's not helped by your man blasting the ball over the bar at the end, but it always feels like you have a conversation about the top managers in the league. Like, he's not in the conversation about it, and you know, he gets a lot of he obviously gets a lot of buy-in, or he gets a bit more time because of who he is. But ultimately, I think everybody accepts he's not going to be there for a decade, and that everybody accepts that at some point the bubble is going to burst and they're going to have to get rid of him.
Well, I guess same for everyone, unless he goes on an unbelievable winning streak.
In the short term.
I know. I try to keep Damien Delaney at bay and only talk to him when things are going well for Solskjaer. I can feel my phone burning and he wants on soon.
How do you feel about it, Joe? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd be starting to lose a touch of faith, I have to say. I thought he did a very good job in lots of aspects, the way he got rid of a lot of dead wood, very impressively. the way he handled Pogba last year when Pogba's agent was saying stupid things on the eve of big games. His management of the players as people seems very good. He knows how to set a team up at times for certain games. Like, they're still very much a counter-attacking team, but they can set up and do a number on some of the bigger teams. You would have to, at this stage, start questioning his decisions
in games. That's not what a Manchester
United team is. That's like, no, it's not like what Manchester United are. But like, they are coming from a lower base as well. They are coming from a lower base, but it is... The biggest concern you'd have, to take your point, Richie, is that he's in the job a while now. They're still not a team that like dominate possession, and certainly not against the better teams. They're a team about moments because of the talent they have. Like, you spend that much money. I mean, it's a bit like the US Ryder Cup team. You're going to have some good moments, but just there against young boys, down to 10 men. I know a Pep Guardiola team, I know a Jurgen Klopp team, I know a Thomas Tuchel team are coached better and can keep the ball better than United. United went to pieces. It was like, you know, like last stand stuff.
That quote that he came out with about midfielders, and it was in the wake of the Young Boys game, I think, where he's talking about people talk about number sixes and number eights and number tens. But yeah. he was essentially using that quote as of throwing in midfielders, and they go in there and they just kind of perform. You don't need people to perform an action specific roles, and it's modern football. You do. Like, times have moved on, and perhaps he was putting a bit of a brave face in it and saying, you know, I'm not trying to give too much of an insight into what his tactical nous is or isn't. But you need to have a bit more cop on than what he's shown in terms of his output for matches like Young Boys. They should be putting teams like Aston Villa away, with the greatest credit in the world to Villa. Like, if we're comparing players versus players and staff versus staff, like, Manchester United should be beating at home Aston Villa 2-3 goals every time. And they you know, probably created enough chances to potentially do that on Saturday. They just, you know, we're into the races in terms of trying to finish them off. And it's the fact that they can't get a consistent run going. Like, they can't get 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 matches like this going in a season. We always reach this point every 2 months where we're talking about his future.
Oh, sorry, they're due their like 5-game winning streak now to calm it all down.
They're going to go until Christmas now, and everything's going to be great. But we'll be back here again. And as long as those conversations are inevitable, he's definitely not the man for the job.
There is, Adrian, a brutal reality, isn't there, that if Manchester United are supposed to be best in class, and they've gone for Van Gaal at a time when he was sort of past it, Jose at a time when he was sort of past it, Moyes was a punt, they didn't stick with him, give him enough time. You compare all of those managers to peak of their powers, Tuchel, Pep, Klopp. The frustration, I suppose, would be, if you're a United fan, they've never gone for the best in class post-Ferguson. They've always had something wrong with the manager. You know, Solskjaer is part of that trend.
And like, the general recruitment, players and managers, obviously, you could lump them all in together, and there's going to be a change at top brass, obviously, there. I think it's the end of the season or the end of the year that Ed Woodward is on the move. Maybe that changes things, I don't know. But, yeah, it just doesn't feel that the sort of managers have kind of gone past their sell-by date. But those comments, definitely, that Richie mentioned there, I was looking at them the other day going, like, even the optics are saying stuff like that. Would you not think, like, that there's people, I don't know, it just didn't come across that well. And, like, getting Ronaldo in some ways should result in Solskjaer staying there for another 3 or 4 or 5 years safely, because no matter like who you put out or what your tactics are, he gets you through games, even if you've shortcomings. But I don't know, maybe that's going to heap the pressure back on, because Ronaldo's like, I've played for some good managers and this guy doesn't really know what he's doing.
Ronaldo's a politician at this stage in his life, and we mentioned this last week, like, he's somebody who would have the ear of the board probably as quick as Solskjaer would now. So if he starts to make rumbling and saying this guy's not, you know, up to it, then they're more as likely to act on his say-so than the Solskjaer's.
That's true. He needs to keep Ronaldo happy, which is an added complication. Now, Claire Malloy, no relation, by the way, Claire Malloy.
Yeah, she has confirmed her retirement from international rugby this evening. Her 74th and final appearance came as a sub in Saturday's heartbreaking 20-18 loss to Scotland, which cost Ireland a place at the Rugby World Cup. Malloy says she's had some priceless highs and some rock-bottom lows during her career. The prop made her Ireland debut back in 2009, and just 4 years later helped Ireland win the Grand Slam. She's a Triple Crown winner as well in 2015, as Ireland won yet another Six Nations title. But sadly, her career ends on those bottom lows.
It sure does. World-class player. So Fiona Coughlan on the way after 8 o'clock, Rory O'Connor as well. This is real crisis stuff now for the Irish women's team. IRFU really need to get to the bottom of what's happened since 2014 and a semi-final. 2017 was very poor, and to not make the World Cup now is disastrous. Nothing short of disastrous for the game.
It's going to be an interesting one to see if the IRFU's report comes out and they decide that what the problem was with the preparations for the Rugby World Cup qualifying and the last 5 years essentially of the Irish women's national team was the IRFU. That is going to be a very interesting situation when they have to point the finger back at themselves, because I don't think there's anybody involved in women's rugby up and down the country that didn't see, like, we didn't see this coming, like, because that it's such a horrible thing to envisage Ireland not qualifying for a World Cup. But it's definitely chickens coming home to roost stuff in terms of the approach that the IRFU had towards 15s rugby on the women's side of the game, because it hasn't been great. Like, the funding drop-offs, concentration on sevens, like, this is stuff that, you know, should have been rectified and shouldn't have, paths that shouldn't have been gone down 4, 5, 6 years ago, and they did, and they're paying for them.
And you know what? One quick point on it, like, watching a good bit of the game at the weekend, it was a bit like the Ryder Cup, to be honest with you. There were the patches of it, and you thought, geez, they're actually going to get this done. When Lindsay Peake came on, and you actually thought, geez, they might actually squeeze out a couple of tries here toward the end. It might not be the worst thing in the world that would have really papered over the cracks if they got those couple of tries and come through against Scotland and made the World Cup. It would have been, everybody accepts papering over the cracks in a big way. So, it's terrible that they're not going to be at the World Cup in Irish rugby. It's a desperate setback. But if it's going to fully lance the boil and they're going to have a proper review into what went on and put in place what needs to be there for the betterment of Irish rugby, then that would be the best possible outcome of all of this.
Fellas, we're out of time. Thanks so much, Richard McCormack.
Nice, lads.
Adrian Barry, thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
Now, with thanks to Gillette, before we get to Dermot Gleese, I'll get to some of your Ryder Cup texts as well in a second. We're celebrating the return to normality. Special prize, UEFA Champions League tickets to see Chelsea against Malmo, 20th of October, with flights and accommodation included. Wow, it's a long time since we've given a prize with flights and accommodation included. You can enter the competition via the Off the Ball Twitter page, where we'll be posting an image of a bearded sports person every day this week. All you have to do is look at the beard with the rest of the face cut off there, obviously, and tell us who this person is for your chance to win this amazing prize. Put your best face forward, hashtag best face forward with Gillette. So just go onto the Twitter page, identify the beard, and best of luck with that.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.